There will be a free concert Thursday night at 7 p.m. at the Washington City Church of the Brethren, 337 North Carolina Avenue Southeast, featuring Emma's Revolution, D.C. Labor Chorus, Songrise, Black Workers Center Chorus, Colleen Cattell, Annie Hassett, and of course the Raging Grannies. This song fest of peace and justice music will inspire and encourage us to keep on keeping on as we invoke the true purpose of Mother's Day to call for peace. All are welcome to join both days. For details, visit codepink.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
And thanks for tuning in to Inside Out LGBTQIA Plus Radio Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM. We come to you live at our new time every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on air or streaming live at WPFWFM.org. You can also find an archive of all our past shows on the podcast app by searching Inside Out Collective. My name is Jay Barber, and I'm so happy to be hosting today's show. My co-hosts are Daffo the Flower and Jay Foster Flower, who are unable to be with us tonight. I am not the only voice you'll hear on the Inside Out. We are a collective, after all. Inside Out illuminates and celebrates the rich diversity that is the LGBTQIA plus experience. Our groundbreaking show has aired since 2008 and is DC's only show of its kind on the FM dial, and one of only a handful in the country. As the name implies, we take you inside this community and look at everything from pop culture to politics through an LGBTQIA plus inclusive lens. We are proud to be part of the legacy of cutting edge public affairs programming on WPFW, home of jazz and justice radio. Inside Out airs every Monday at 6 p.m. on 89.3 FM and WPFWFM.org. Each member of the collective brings their unique voice and perspective to the show, and we are typically on air every third Monday of the month. Today's topic is Women in Ministry, Volume 3. Yay! And it's open to callers, so please call us at 202-588-0893. Again, that's 202-588-0893. I'd love to introduce tonight's minister, Reverend Dr. Adelphi Johnson. Hi there, Adelphi.
Hello, hello, hello. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. We made it.
We made it. We made it.
Give a brief intro with your bio. 2016 Master of Divinity, the Samuel D. DeWitt Proctor School of Theology at Virginia Union University. 2023 Doctor of Ministry, the Samuel DeWitt Proctor School of Theology at Virginia Union. Dissertation title, Forbid Them Not, Moving a Congregation from Exclusion and Dissonance of Queer and Trans Bodies to inclusion and acceptance. Go ahead on dissertation.
I like that. Yes, ma'am.
A career, the Community Church of Washington, D.C., United Church of Christ, senior pastor, 2022 to the present, first Black lesbian woman to be installed as senior pastor of a congregation in the Potomac Association, the Central Atlantic Conference of the United Church of Christ, D.C. Public Schools, where I know you from.
Yes, DCPS in the house.
Yes, present specialist LGBTQIA plus programs, and SMILE 2016 to 2022 director of programs. You got an accolade of awards. I'm not going to name them all, but
right.
Yes, we are in the presence of excellence this evening. Thank
Listen,
you.
Listen, hello.
This is Inside Out, and you are listening to Jay Barber, Daffo the Flower, and Jade Foster Flower on WPFW 89.3 FM, WPFWFM.org. We're going to go with our first sermonic selection, Jesus Build a Fence. Then we're going to move on into our discussion. Shed bright and tear. Oh, because you didn't have no one to help you along the way, and oh Lord, and if there is anyone, oh, let me tell you what I've done. I've asked Jesus to be a fence around me and protect me every day. I told him, so oh Jesus, be a fence, oh. Will hurt you to your heart to see loved ones to depart. But oh, children, death is no stranger to anyone. And oh Lord, but just as long as you stay in the fold, you never have to worry when death knock on your door. That's like Jesus. Be a fence around you, and you never have to worry anymore. Just bow down. So, oh, Jesus, be a fence all around me. When you get better, so, oh, Jesus, I want you to protect me. Hello, hello. Welcome back. This is Jay Barber, Inside Out Collective, the Fellowship Hall you're listening to on WPFWFM.org, WPFW 89.3. And tonight we are here and welcoming Pastor Reverend Dr. Adelphi Johnson this evening. How are you doing, Adelphi?
I am good on this good, beautiful Monday.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's a beautiful day. It's been a beautiful day.
It is.
So we are here to ask you some questions about being a minister, Reverend. And my first question to you was, how old were you when you realized who you were and what you wanted in life?
That's a loaded question. So, like, if we're talking about in the aspects of, like, ministry and what that looks like. So, let me start here. There's no shame in my game and me telling my age. So, I'm proud to be 42, right? Because it is lit on the other side of 40, and folks just ought to be grateful to get here, right?
Amen.
So, standing in my truth and what that feels like. So, at 42, I realized that... I was called to do something, it had to be maybe in like late 20s, maybe early 30s. And there, if I, when I look back on it, there were signs along the way, right? Like how many times those things happen, like we hear things or, you know, we wonder like, is this really what I'm hearing? Like, is this God or is this gas, right? Is this God or is this some, just something that, you know, you're conjuring up in your mind? And so, you know, I spent time doing that, but it got to a point where I just could not run any longer, if you will. And so it had to be about late 20s, early 30s. I finally had reached a place where I was able to articulate out of my mouth that I was good enough to be called by God, which then made me realize and understand that like there was a calling on my life and being able to be clear on what that calling was. Well, almost clear, not fully clear, but kind of.
Okay. All right. So asking, that's going to lead me into the other question.
Yes.
coming into the life of being a Black, you know, lesbian, like what was that? When did you realize that that was something that you wanted in your life?
So, like, I knew at the age of 4. Oh. That I liked women, right?
Okay.
I will never forget, I can't remember the name of the video, but it was a video by Madonna, and she was running out on the beach, and she had this like sheer kind of like dress on, and like the waves were like pushing up on her. And it was at that moment that I liked what I saw. And I liked the way that I felt internally when I saw those things, right? But at 4 years old, who has language to be able to say, well, I, at that time, let me say this. So we're talking about some years ago. There was no language. There was no in-school support. There was no, this is a part of the folks in my community. So I didn't feel safe enough or know what the pathway would be to take to be able to live my authentic truth, right?
Right.
And so while I knew at 4, it wasn't until maybe I was around 17, 18, that I had reached a place where I was like, okay, enough is enough. Like, this is, now mind you, I already had a child at this point, right? But I had reached that point where I was like, enough is enough. Like, this, I have to be able to be free in whatever that freedom looks like for me. And so me being able to start to live that out loud was around 18-ish, especially after I graduated high school.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's dope. So how did you merge the two? Was there like, some type of moment? Was it like, yeah, kind of explain how you merge kind of like ministry into your lifestyle and that kind of thing. I'm sure a lot of our listeners would like to know that part of your story.
Yeah. So the easiest way to describe it is that like, I'm a church kid, right? Like, I grew up in church all of my life. We knew church. I knew church Monday through Sunday. Monday, there was missionary meeting. Tuesday, there was Bible study. Tuesday was prayer meeting or deacon meeting or trustee meeting or something. Wednesday was Bible study. Thursday was choir rehearsal. Friday, there was something that had to be done at church in prep for Sunday. And then back at church on Saturday, doing the other prepping thing for Sunday. So church has always been a part of my life. Always. And even when I found myself astray, and we're using, you know, churchy language, right? But even when I found myself in spaces and places that just were not the healthiest for me, church was still a very important part of who I was. I think for me, part of it was because since I had a kid at 15, like, and there was already a piece of reconciliation I had to do within myself and with the God of my understanding to believe that, like, God was not forsaking me and, like, not out here trying to embarrass me and whatnot, you know, by having a kid so young. And also just not knowing, like, what it would mean for life after that. By the time I got to a place where I had to come, where I felt comfortable in coming out, and then also, like, reconciling my spirituality and my sexuality, it was more like, well, if God ain't left me for this, then surely can't God won't leave me, you know, for me living my authentic truth. And so it quickly became a Well, God has to love me. God has to care, right? And I had spent time, you know, going to another church or going to a church where they spewed a lot of LGBTQ hate, you know, from the pulpit. I mean, even down to the point of where, like, service will be happening. Let somebody walk in the service that even looks like they identify as queer and trans. If the pastor was preaching, the pastor would reshift the entire message to then begin to condemn the person, you know, their actions, their way of being, you know, who they are, their character, and et cetera. And like, I just knew that that just was not the God that I served. Like, I knew this God of love. And if there's a God of love, then God can't love everybody yet cherry pick who that everybody is. And so a part of that reconciliation for me was being able to understand that God loved me just the way that I was. And then it quickly turned into, and that's why everything that you went through to get to where you are was a part of the process. You feel me?
Yes. Now that is a summer right there.
Listen, it had to happen. That's what we're going to call it.
I love that. Okay. So would you say that you are optimistic about the future of women in ministry?
So, of course, I'm optimistic about the future of women in ministry because I'm a woman in ministry, right? And I have to be optimistic about it because, like, I just believe and know that there are so many other women out here like me that need space, that need opportunity, whether it's created or given, right? To be able to have that level of platform, to be able to proclaim the gospel and speak the gospel truth in a way that's authentic to them, in a way that is, you know, inclusive of everyone, and, you know, in a way that really celebrates and honors what women have to bring and offer to ministry.
Okay. So that kind of brings me back to wondering, this is a question I'm wondering. So sure. Being a young mother, tell me, like, you know, how all of this kind of has equipped you to ministry presently. Like, how has your life story kind of equipped you to the place that you are now?
Yeah, so I live my life in this model of people can care less about what you know until they know how much you care, right? And so because of that, you know, and I say this like in a very humbling way, but it really is just true. I don't negate or, you know, cherry pick anybody's call to ministry, right? I wasn't there when God called folks, you know, I wasn't there when, whether it was a conference call or what it was, like, I wasn't there for that. I just know where I was when God called me. And in that, how it's prepared me for ministry and how it has equipped me for ministry, and knowing that people don't care how much you know until how much you care, there are some things that you just can't fake. And that's even in the pulpit. I don't care how deep your hoop is. I don't care how strong, you know, your words may be. I don't care how many SAT words that you use in your preaching. I don't care if you can preach for 45 minutes to an hour. People know when you BSing. People know when you ain't been through nothing. People know when you're not being truthful about what you're saying. People know when you're saying one thing, but even the energy that you give does not live up to that. And like, if I don't know anything else, Jay, like, I hands down know that even if we take like a fraction of the stuff that I went through, right, and have experienced in my life, it has prepared me for this moment and for the moments that God has presented. Because when I say any and everybody is welcome, any and everybody is welcome. Oh, you pregnant at 15? Boo, I get it. Ain't no judgment. Go ahead and sit down, you and your baby, right? Oh, you having issues with substance use? Boo, I get it. I used to sit in church high all the time. Come on and sit down. I don't even care what you smell like. Like, that's not my business. Oh, you was up at the club all night? Boo, guess what? I was too. That was my story at one point in time. Come on and have a seat. And so for me, it really is just about, like, it removes the judgment of it all. Like, it really a lot, yeah, for me to be in a space and place where it really is, you know, less about judgment and really truly about folks just having access.
Amen. I love that. I believe that that is where ministry and church and religion should be trying to steer itself presently, is to get away from all that judgment and, you know, really trying to cultivate, you know, the person, who they are, their soul, that kind of thing. And
from
this idea that folks need to be judged for who they are. So I have another question for you. Do you have any pre-ministry like rituals, or what do you do before you go out and preach?
Yes. Ask the secrets. Ask the tea. What do I do?
What's the tea?
Yes. What's the tea? Right. So, you know, I'm a preface this, because I don't do disclaimers, right? Because again, like, I'm at the place of space where I'm like, okay with being in my truth. And so as much as I love Jesus and God, and I'm a Christian, right? And I, but you know, that's my belief. That's my upbringing. Spirituality does not just stop there for me. Right. So spirituality also includes other practices. It also includes other things that I bring into the holistic practice of what spirituality means for me. So prepping for preaching. So I say that to say that prepping for preaching includes a couple of things. One, it happens days before, like, I actually preach, because I need to take time to think about, God, what is it that you want for me to say? Because I never want to get up and just say whatever, because I don't want to play with God's people like that, right? There are some people that can do it. That's just not my bag. And so I want to take time, and I always take time to pray and ask God, what is it that God, you know, wants me to say? What is it that God is asking for me to convey? Like, what is the topic, God, that, you know, you want me to look at? Which then steers me in a scripture and being able to research different scriptures and things. Sometimes that requires me to sit down by the window with candles lit and the window open in complete silence and quietness. Sometimes I need to sit outside, right, in air and absorb other energies that, you know, are coming from nature. And sometimes it also includes music. It can be everything from Erykah Badu to the latest gospel hit from Pastor Mike Johnson. It just really depends. Like, I'm just really, you know, I'm just really fluid like that when it comes to it. And so, you know, I spend those time doing those things and spend a lot of time praying. Sometimes I do wordsmithing and word boarding. And then I finally get to a place after I feel like it's like meandered around in my mind and my spirit for a while, and I've had time to pray. I then am able to sit down and begin to type.
Okay.
And so I type, you know, type out my sermons. Sometimes I can type out full sermons. We're talking about maybe like 7, 8, 10, 12 pages. Sometimes God is like, nope, I'm going to give you these two and trust that I'm going to give you the rest. And that's just how it kind of flows. Sundays that I do preach, like in the mornings, my routine is very simple. Like, I get up normally about 4:30 or 5, because I really can't do a whole lot of sleeping before I preach. I don't eat breakfast in the morning, so it's normally like just a sip of water just to make sure I have something on my system. And I anoint myself every day, so that's always a part of the ritual and practice. And, you know, spend some time talking, praying, talking with my ancestors, you know, evoking the spirits and the gods, you know, all of the things. And listening to whatever music as I prepare for service. I always like to open up all the blinds in my house because I love sunlight, natural sunlight. So I do those things, and then I make my way on to church.
Oh, nice.
Or wherever I'm going, yeah.
Okay. Got a whole routine.
Yes.
So we're going to take this moment. And again, this is our Women in Ministry, Volume 3. We're opening up our phone lines to callers. Please call us at 202-588-0893. Again, that's 202-588-0893. And we're going to hit you with another sermonic selection. I think you will enjoy this, Adolphe.
Uh-oh.
K-Classic. Listen, the song is crazy. You know, I got an idea, though. Make it a little crazy.
Well, you can't stop this here. You can't top this chair. Work too hard, my God. I'ma play my card. I'ma leave your atmosphere. It's so toxic. And I hear your gossip. I'm aware they plotting, but I got no option. And I can't be stopped. I'ma keep on walking. And my power and my purpose and that backbiting so worthless. And my faith on and it's working. I'm one of one and I'm certain that I won the battle. It's over. We did it. I'm still. I'm C. I'm P. No limit. Can't stop it. It's me and Corbin in the pocket. Got the plug and the socket.
They told you that you couldn't do it cause you washed up. Ain't like them bad girls said you should get your sauce up. But I got this plan and you might not understand. I'ma go hard as I can and I'm gonna be the boss of it. And just watch me do this, put no limits, only swag on it. Walk right up to the front where I belong and brag on it. Go to the top, I'ma give it all I got. Might take a lot, but we ain't gonna ever stop. From me, so you can say what you want. I go harder, stronger, be who I'm supposed to be. But I don't let it break me, cause I'm still on my way. I don't believe I'm something special. Can't take that from me. So you can say what you want. I go harder, stronger, be who I'm supposed to be. Cause I'm unstoppable. I get all the way in it. That's the way I was made. And I'm up on my business. Cause I'm unstoppable. Ain't no hoping and wishing. Say a prayer, catch a wave.
Good. This is Inside Out, and you are listening to Jay Barber, Daffo the Flower, and Jade Flower Foster on 89.3 WPFW FM, WPFWFM.org. We're here today talking to Reverend Dr. Adolphe Johnson in our series, Women in Ministry, Volume 3. We're going to ask a quick question and then we're going to go to station break right after that question. But Adolphe, what do you feel like you need to preach?
What do I need? I mean, truthfully, nothing but God. Like, because, like, I mean, everything else without God, like, what am I doing? Like, it's not preaching. Like, preaching is proclaiming the gospel, right? And it's, you know, a specific task, and it's a very specific thing. And if I just want to motivationally speak, like, I can motivationally speak. Like, I don't, and even though, even still within that, like, you know, I need God for those things. But to need to preach, the only thing that I need is God. Like everything else, I don't, it doesn't have to be in a church. It can be outside. You know, it doesn't need to be in a pulpit. It can be in a car. It can be on the radio. Like it can be wherever. Like I don't need like the physicalities of things, just God.
Okay, thank you. We all take this moment and head into our station break. You are listening to WPFW 89.3 FM, The Fellowship Hall.
Inspired by Holly Near's Send In 1,000 Grandmothers, Raging Grannies and Code Pink are bringing grandmothers and those who love us to the U.S. Capitol Thursday and Friday, May 9th and 10th, to lobby and hold our legislators accountable. In order to nourish our courage, there will be a free concert Thursday night at 7 p.m. at the Washington City Church of the Brethren, 337 North Carolina Avenue Southeast, featuring Emma's Revolution, DC Labor Chorus, Songrise, Black Workers Center Chorus, Colleen Cattell, Annie Hassett, and of course the Raging Grannies. This song fest of peace and justice music will inspire and encourage us to keep on keeping on as we invoke the true purpose of Mother's Day to call for peace. All are welcome to join both days. For details, visit codepink.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
We are here speaking to Reverend Dr. Adolphe Johnson. Please tune in. If you are open to giving us a call, our lines are open. You can call into 202-588-0893. Again, that's 202-588-0893. We're going to continue our discussion, Reverend Dr. Adolphe, and get into some more of these questions that I have for her this evening. My next question, do you work with kind of like male ministers from the old guard at any point?
So they exist. I know where they are. I know what churches they pastor, you know, and, you know, what churches they serve in. I will say, you know, contrary to popular belief, they all are not cis and straight. You know, there's a lot of pastors from the old guard who even are a part of the queer community that carry a lot of, you know, those old ideas and, you know, ways of thinking, you know, those things that are not as inclusive, let me say, or progressive, let me, you know, frame it in that way.
Right.
That are not as inclusive and progressive, and that, you know, some ways of thinking that that have historically and traditionally caused harm to folks and that are still present day, you know, causing harm to folks. However, I don't spend much time with them, you know, because that's just not where, you know, I just desire to push my energy. Now, of course, when it comes to, you know, if folks are in a place and space and willing to even explore and just have conversation, because I'm never one to believe that everyone has to believe the way that I believe, right? And think right. The way that I think. But if we are at least able to sit down and have a conversation to bring about some sort of understanding and education and just like the expanding of your theology, right? And what it means, yeah, I'll do that all day, you know, with you know, but yeah, I don't spend too much energy and time with the other folks that just ain't there.
So have you ever had a moment where you've had to defend yourself for being a woman minister? Like, has that been a thing?
When is it not a thing, right? When is it not a thing? I mean, let's start with just talking about the fact that in the year 2022, I was the first Black lesbian woman to be installed as a senior pastor of the Potomac Association within the Central Atlanta Conference of the UCC. And I say that not as a brag or flex, even though that is a flex, you know, but
that's
in the same
deal.
Yeah, that really is a big deal. And also in the same token, it also sheds light on where the gaps exist, because in the year 2022, why am I the first?
Say that.
You know, and so, you know, while on one end, it's like, yes, you know, girl, you can, you know, add that to your portfolio, add that to your resume, you know, to your introduction when people introduce you. But then it also is like, there also then means that there's some work to do, right? Or that these things have been present for a while. So yes, I've experienced, you know, the folks, you know, feeling, you know, that because I'm a woman, that, you know, I'm not able to, you know, lead, you know, in a way that, you know, leadership needs to happen, or, you know, in ways that folks are historically or traditionally accustomed to. But I still lead anyway.
As you should.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and I think partly because I've dealt with it also in the secular world in my career, like, I'm just not, the sad part is just like, I'm used to it. Okay. And it shouldn't be anything that folks should be used to. But like, I'm just accustomed to knowing that that's just how things are, and just, you know, not being afraid to be in those spaces and be that person to experience it, but also do something about it.
So what would you say to women that want to quit ministry because of rejection or some of the things that you may have experienced?
Yes, I would tell them, don't quit. Let me tell you, don't quit. Your voice is needed. Use your voice even when it shakes, right? Use it and do it. Don't quit. And find yourself a circle that can pour into you, so that, you know, when you are in spaces that are not as affirming, when you are in spaces that are not as supportive, that you have a band of individuals that understand and that also can pour into you, so that your cup won't run dry.
Oh, that's a word.
Mm-hmm.
I have another question. Do you ever regret saying something that was right, but told in the wrong way or in the wrong moment?
So I don't have any regrets. And that's partially because, and this is not like just like, you know, anything spiritual, but maybe it is spiritual. Like, I've never lived my life in regrets. And so, you know, I've always been that person to believe whether it felt good or whether it did not feel good, right? Whether I was in the right or whether I was in the wrong. While I could have gone back and did something differently, you know, I always feel like there was a learning lesson in the process. And so I just don't have any regrets in those things. There are moments where sometimes I have, you know, wondered, you know, did it come across in the right way? You know, did it land in the way that, you know, it was intended? God, was it, you know, your words that were coming out of my mouth and not mine? You know, those things. And it's more so in a sense of, again, like, I don't believe in mismanaging people. Like, that's just not what I believe in. And like, I really take ministry and the opportunity that I have to be able to, you know, journey with people in this position and in this way. Like, I always, you know, want to make sure that whatever I say or do that is coming from a place of what God is saying and not something that I, and so there, you know, there's always that wonder in making sure. But regrets, no.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
So how can people in general become an ally and an advocate for women in ministry?
how folks can become allies and advocates for women in ministry. One, invite women to come who are in ministry to come and do things, whether it's talking on your radio show. Hello, somebody. That's how you're being an advocate, right? Don't just, you know, it's not just in the preaching engagements, but also in the preaching engagements, right? Have inviting folks, if you have, you know, somebody that's looking for women preachers or just preachers, period, like, you know, putting women's names in hats. I'm always one to believe that, you know, it's important for us to speak names of individuals that we know that are doing the work and that we know that are qualified to do the work in rooms that they are not in yet. And so people have done it for me, and it's only right that and we do it for others. And so that's another way that folks can be advocates and allies. And then I will also say, like, when folks hear and see, like, things that they know are not right, speak up about it, right? Like, so for instance, and this is something that happens, like, super, super commonly. Like, say there's a revival or something that a church is having, and they have, like, five different preachers, a different preacher for every night. There would be some churches that you will have five different preachers, and all the preachers will be men. The woman that is not even on the flyer will be listed as the psalmist. So she can come and sing, but, you know, there are no women preachers. So even when folks see things like that in their places of worship, or, you know, churches they connect with or faith communities or whatever, speak up about that. You know, say, well, where are the women's representation at? Like, have you all considered, and start thinking about women that need to be considered that can be in those spaces?
Yeah, I think that's good to, you know, bring up more in terms of where are the women at, right? It's 2024. Mm-hmm. You would think that that wouldn't even be a thing, but right, here we are. So that's interesting. What advice would you give to women entering ministry?
I would say find your own preaching voice. And I would even just say, like, even just like find your voice, right? Because it goes even beyond preaching. You know, finding one's voice, being able to stand in whatever your truth and authenticity is, and knowing that as a woman in ministry, like, everything that you bring is what qualifies you for it, right? And so not saying or feeling like you have to sound like or present like, you know, what folks think that preachers, you know, which they traditionally, you know, think about men, and, you know, folks in ministry, what that looks like. But whatever that feels like and looks like for you, being able to find that. And I will also say, like, for women coming into ministry, know that you were called. And there is a very beautiful gift that you have to bring to the body of Christ, to, you know, the body of Christ, to whatever, you know, spiritual community you are a part of, because it may not be the body of Christ for some folks, right? It may be some other spiritual practice, but whatever spiritual practice and community that is, that you have something very beautiful in all of who you are to bring to it.
I like that. So do you feel like women should defend their place in ministry? Like, how do you go about defending your space? Like you said, you could show up to a program and it's one woman minister, and she might not even be listed as a minister on mm-hmm. the program. So how do women defend their spaces in ministry?
Yeah, so I'm going to tell you how I defend my space, right? Okay. So, you know, here's how I defend my space in ministry. You know, if I'm invited somewhere, Reverend Dr. Adalphi Johnson is what it is. Period. Why? Because I earned it. I have the student loans to prove it. And not that student loans are a flex, but this wasn't some degree that somebody gave to me. Like, I sacrificed blood, sweat, and tears for both of them. Okay. And sacrifice a lot of things for it, and I earned them. And so even in things like that, that's how I defend, you know, my place in ministry. And not that it needs defending, but more so like, you know, you're going to know that I'm here. Right. And that I'm not just coming, you know, I'm coming with some credentials. I'm coming with some credits. How I also defend my place in ministry, like, I look at ministry as the world is ministry for me. And so whether it's the work I do at DCPS, that's a part of me defending my, you know, my place in ministry. The work I do in community when I am giving out condoms and connecting with folks for needle exchange programs or mentoring programs, like that's defending my place in ministry. You know, what I do in physical church, the pulpit, you know, ministry in the church and context in that way, that's defending my place in ministry and being unapologetic about it. You know, with my 5011 tattoos, you know, because I am, you know, I'm a tatted preacher and I love it. You know, but with all the tattoos, with, you know, my sides and my back shaved and cut, you know, with, you know, me loving and my favorite color is Ruby Roo lipstick. You know, I love a good red lipstick. And I love a fierce heel, you know? And yes. So a fierce heel on one day and a pair of J's on the next. Don't get it twisted. And sometimes it's in the same day. And so that's how I defend my place in ministry, like being able to show up as my authentic self, you know, not being ashamed of anything that I've experienced, not being ashamed of anything that I have done, and not being ashamed and actually being able to celebrate the accomplishments that I've made and what that means, like in the work that I do and how I know it's connected to my calling and purpose. Mm-hmm.
That is awesome. So, you know, just on some creative thinking, what biblical character do you relate most closely to and why?
You're about to make me, you're going to make me say some words, honey.
Yes, say them.
Listen, so because, you know, and people are probably going to be like, oh, this is like blasphemous, honey. But I would say like the person that I probably would, there's two women that I would probably connect most to in the Bible characters. Let me say three.
Okay.
And I'm going to give them to you quick. One, Jezebel. Jezebel always had a bad rap, right? Mm-hmm. And folks always frowned upon Jezebel, you know, because of the things that she did or whatever. When, you know, oftentimes people just don't take a moment to realize that, one, thinking about time and context and how folks talked about women in that day and like the onus that women did not have over their bodies, over decisions they were making, when it really just could have been about sexual liberation and freedom. So Jezebel is one, because they also use Jezebel as a, you know, if you're a woman in ministry or just a woman in the church, don't ever be like Jezebel. Oh, if you wear red lipstick, you're like Jezebel. That's why I wear red lipstick everywhere I go. So that's one.
I love it.
Two, the woman at the well, right? So the woman at the well, you know, Jesus, she was at the well. She was there at high day. Jesus was like, what you doing here? She's like, I'm trying to get a drink of water. He's like, why? You know, what's your name or whatever? Where's your husband? She was like, you know, something about he was at home or whatever. And Jesus was like, well, you've had many of them. And so, you know, I've been married, you know, a time or two. And so in that, even in that moment, I can relate to her. Just because so often there are many things about us that we tend to hide from, that we try to hide from our relationship with God, and that the church has said that because we've had these experiences, whether it was divorce or teen pregnancy or substance abuse, that that doesn't give us right to have access to Jesus. And in that moment, Jesus let her know that it don't matter how many husbands you have or don't have, right? Or how many folks you've been with or not been with, you still have the right to have access to me. So that's one. And then the last one is the woman with the issue of blood. And this is because, you know, she had an issue where she bled for 12 years and she had tried so many things to be able to rid herself of this issue. She went to many doctors, you know, and all this and a third. They ostracized her from her community. But there was a day that she knew Jesus was coming in town and she literally pressed her way to him. According to the scripture, she crawled on the ground just to touch the hem of his garment. And so I relate to her in the aspect of like, no matter what things have happened in my life, I've always found a way, even if I had to crawl, to press, you know, in my spirituality to get to know where my help comes from. And so those would be the three women.
I love, okay. Mm-hmm. Light us up. I love that. That's a good one. Hey. So based on what your response, do you think single women in ministry have it harder than married women? We asked this question before.
And I'm going to answer this question. Yes. You know, and it's funny because I can answer from the perspective of I've been married while in ministry, and I'm single, you know, and have been single in ministry, right? So I think that it depends on what the person who is in ministry needs. And I think based upon what that individual needs, it may be okay for them to be single and in ministry, because maybe like the need or the companionship or the support that a partner can offer, that may not be something they desire.
Got it.
And so I think it really depends upon the person. Now, what I will say is, when you are in, I would say for me, when you are in ministry and you have a supportive person connected to you, whether it is a significant other, whether it is a spouse, you know, whatever language folks want to use, you know, to describe those people. But when you have a supportive person connected to you, it does lighten the load in very beautiful ways.
Nice.
It does.
All right, love. Mm-hmm. So my last question for you this evening is, if you have anyone to give you some advice, what advice has been given to you that you feel like changed your life?
So I'm going to have to give credit to this woman. Her name is Deidre Gray. And she's absolutely amazing and wonderful. And she and I were talking one day, and she said to me, the worst they can tell you is no.
Mm.
And so that piece of advice that she gave me, it really had, like, I really had to take a moment to, like, really sit back and think about, like, what that meant and what that just meant, like, in the context of my life and, you know, the things that I was doing and in ministry. And where I landed with that is, you know, sometimes hearing no is honestly not that bad. And so if the worst they can tell you is no, then there isn't too much, if anything, that you shouldn't be willing to ask for or be willing to want to set your stakes on or be willing to want to do, not like for the title in the sense or for the call, but connected to, like, because of your call, you want to do this thing, right? And so that freed me in a lot of ways of being able to, if I think it, I can do it. You know, if you know, if I want it, you know, pray about it, manifest about it, chant about it, to walk into spaces, you know, in the words of my good girlfriend Janelle Monae, and float. You know, I don't walk, I don't dance, I just float.
Hey,
you know,
yes.
And so, that was a piece of advice that has freed me in a lot of spaces and places, and especially in ministry. The worst they can tell you is no.
I love that. Mm-hmm. That is beautiful. So my last question is, how can we support? You have any things coming up? Is there any way we can support you? Where can we find you?
Yes. So you can find me on all social, well, not all social media platforms. I'm on Facebook at Adalphie Johnson. First and last name. You can find me on Instagram, RevDR_BossLadyAdalphie. Adalphie.
I love that.
Yes. You can also find me at the Community Church of Washington, D.C., United Church of Christ. We have service every Sunday at 11:30 a.m., 5201 Ames Street, Northeast, Washington, D.C.
Yes. Thank you so much for this wonderful conversation, Adalphie. It's smooth. It was smooth. We at the end.
Yes, it was like butter, baby.
It was. You're listening to Inside Out Collective. You can stay in touch with all of us via Instagram and Facebook at the Inside Out Collective. Check us out next month. And thank you so much for being here with us, Reverend Dr. Adalphie Johnson. We appreciate you.
Thank you. It was great.
Let your will be done on earth, 'cause it's already done in heaven. Let your kingdom come on earth, 'cause you already run the heavens. Let your glory fill the earth, 'cause it already floods the heavens. Let your freedom ring on earth, 'cause it's already rung in heaven. Let the choir sing on earth. Let your presence flood the earth, 'cause it's overflowing in heaven. Let your servants rise on earth, 'cause they're never weary in heaven. Let your healing fall on earth, 'cause ain't nobody sick up in heaven. Let your praises be found on earth, 'cause they always resound in heaven. Let the choir sing on earth. Let your will be done on earth in the same way it is in heaven. On earth, let your kingdom come on earth, just like it is in heaven. On earth, let your justice reign on earth, just like it rains in heaven. Let your mercy cover the earth, 'cause it's running over in heaven. Let your love conquer the earth, 'cause it already governs the heavens. Let revival come on earth, 'cause it's every day up in heaven. Let your choir sing on earth.
DC Music Census is now live. Led by the DC Commission on the Arts and Humanities, the DC Music Census is an initiative that collects data from music industry professionals about the DMV's music economy, allowing the district to make informed decisions in supporting the music ecosystem. The census is anonymous and designed for anyone working within the music industry. Members of the music community may take the census by visiting dcmusiccensus.org. That's dcmusiccensus.org. WPFW, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
Hi, this is Robin Holden.
Hi, this is Miyuki Williams.
WPFW programmers Miyuki Williams, Robin Holden, Craig Williams, Jim Byers, Verna Avery Brown, James Funk, Captain Fly, Tom Cole, Bill Wax, Kim Babe, Joni Eisenberg, Arthur McLeod, Donald Temple, Bill Starr, Lona Elias, Ron Pinchback, David Whetstone, DJ Abby, DJ Divine, and Willard Jenkins will celebrate you at Washington's premier jazz club, Tacoma Station, 6914 4th Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. This is a musical tribute on Sunday, May 26, from 5 until 9 p.m.
This event features internationally renowned bassist Michael Bowie, Hope Udobie on keyboards, Charles Wilson drums, Grace J and Sing Steph on vocals, and others.
Please come and join your favorite programmers for some great jazz, food, cocktails, and a little dancing for a Sunday jazz happy hour you will never forget.
The event happens at the Tacoma Station Jazz Club, 6914 4th Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., a musical fundraising tribute. Sunday, May 26, 5 until 9 p.m. The tickets are $50, and there are only 100 tickets for this VIP event. Secure your tickets to the Jazz Happy Hour.
Tickets are available at Eventbrite. When in Eventbrite, please search WPFW Tacoma Station. We're looking